Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily political podcast. I'm Cindy Yu, and today I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. Two captured British terrorists risk facing the death penalty in America. But breaking from the norm, Home Secretary Sajid Javid has not sought assurances from the US that the two will not be put to death. Katie, what exactly has happened?
So this appears to be a break in convention, which used to at least be seen to be the case. So if you are to extradite a British citizen to face a trial in another country, you would seek an assurance that they would not face the death penalty because Britain is not a country that supports the death penalty. What has become clear is in the case of these two suspected ISIS terrorists, Sajid Javid, the Home Secretary, has not done that. This has become a row because this is not convention, and lots of human rights groups are worried about A, this example, but to the precedent it would set. And today we have a further twist in the tale, which is a briefing showing that although Boris Johnson, then Foreign Secretary, did agree to this in theory, he did flag concerns that if you don't use this right on this specific case, it's going to make it a lot harder in future cases when you want to make sure that the British citizen being sent for trial isn't going to get the death penalty to get that assurance. So I think it's a thorny topic, but it does sound like Sajid Javid is not planning to row back on his comments and will probably be doubling down on this.
So, James, why has Sajid Javid done this?
Well, first of all, I don't think they are British citizens anymore. Judging from what Ben Wallace, the security minister, said in the House of Commons, they've had their citizenship taken away from them. I think the calculation is this, which is these people are not kind of ordinary criminals. They are, we should say allegedly, they are allegedly terrorists. And I think the government, I mean, the decision not to request this assurance about the death penalty suggests that the government view them more as kind of combatants on a battlefield rather than as kind of classic criminals. My personal opinion is that, you know, what the Daily Telegraph reporting today makes quite clear is that Theresa May didn't want them tried in the UK, wanted them tried in the US. I think we should want them tried here. I mean, these were British citizens when they went overseas to do this. We should be prepared to say, look, hang on a second, they have committed a great crime against this country. They have gone to take up arms with a foreign organisation that is actively hostile to this country. They have allegedly killed British citizens. I think we should actively want to try them here. And if they are found guilty, to have them imprisoned here.
I think it's a tricky one because at the moment, when they obviously cease to be British citizens, that makes it more complicated. And we also don't really have a set way at the moment of prosecuting those people who do travel to Syria and then suspected of terrorist acts. And I think that's been a problem when you see some people coming back, because unless we want to, say, make it illegal to travel to Syria, you need certain types of evidence. But I think on the point of whether or not to try them here, I do think that I sense, at least, public opinion, if you then try them here and then the taxpayer has to spend hundreds of thousands of pounds to put these people in prisons. And I know James is going to disagree with me, but I do think you get to a point when you're like, is this really what we should be spending our money on? So then you're probably like, okay, perhaps they should be tried in America. But I would be worried about the precedent. I think the Foreign Secretary, or the then Foreign Secretary, raised an important point there, which is, is it going to make that harder when, say, we have a hacker in the UK sent to America for trial, at least they try and take them there, for us to try and get an assurance that they're not going to receive the death penalty?
I think the point, in a way, is the question here shouldn't be the cost of trying them and if they were found guilty, imprisoning them. It should be the question about the offence they've committed and where justice should be done. And I personally think the British Prime Minister should feel that the gravest offence has been done against, you know, if they're not going to be tried in Syria or Iraq or where these offences allegedly took place, you know, they should be tried here as they were when they went out, British citizens, I think.
Theresa May was Home Secretary and she upheld this policy of seeking assurances. Now Sajid Javid has broken away from it. What has Downing Street said?
Well, there was a bit of confusion yesterday. Downing Street initially didn't offer kind of full-throated defence. He said she kind of knew this was going on, but didn't actively associate her with the decision. By the end of the day, they were actively associating her with the decision. But I mean, this is a long. I mean, this takes us back to the same problem from which we've had since September the 11th, 2001, and Guantanamo Bay, which is, you know, this whole question of how do you treat these people who are clearly, in some respects, they look like combatants for the enemy in a war. In other respects, though, because they are not fighting for a state, how do you try them in these circumstances? I mean, this is a difficult question that we haven't yet worked out a kind of proper answer to.
So, it's the last day of Parliament and Theresa May is still Prime Minister. Katie, did you think she'd make it?
So we're recording this early afternoon and therefore I think it looks very much like she's going to make it. But given the events over the past few weeks, I'm not going to believe it until we see it. I think there'll be massive sighs of relief in Number 10 today that she has managed to do this. There are points last week when it just looked so choppy that it seemed, for example, they had lost that customs union amendment vote. She probably wouldn't be here, or she would have just had to survive a confidence vote to be here. I think the problem for her is the Number 10 strategy does appear to be the summer will calm people down, and when people come back in September, they'll be refreshed. Obviously, having a bit of a Brexit tour in the meantime to try and sell this. But I think the problems go much deeper than that. So although she might get a brief break, her problems are far from over.
I mean, speaking of the Brexit tour, did yesterday go to plan for her, James?
I think yesterday kind of revealed the slight problem of how they're trying to sell the Chequers plan. There was no new top line from her conversation with voters. There was no... I still personally think that she needs to do something where she needs to basically go out and say, look, there are trade-offs involved in this plan. This is why I think the trade-offs are worth it. I think until she does that, she won't get cut through of her arguments in that, you know, I don't mean the Number 10 plan was for the top line to be about the fact that she thinks cooking is a good thing to do because you get to eat the food as well as make it. And I think that...
Good point, though.
It is a good point. But I think that is the challenge. I think Number 10's real hope isn't so much necessarily just that the summer will calm people down, but basically as the clock ticks closer, people will think, well, if it's this deal or whatever the deal ends up being negotiated with the EU or no deal, that's better. That something beats nothing. And I mean, that is their hope. And their other hope is that a lot of the Brexiteers who are currently kind of inveighing against the Chequers plan will, when faced with that choice, more of them will kind of reluctantly peel off and with no great enthusiasm back the government. It is quite interesting that Desmond Swain, who wrote a piece absolutely kind of lacerating the Chequers plan, he ends his final paragraph by basically saying, this plan is awful, it's rubbish, it's this, it's that. But if the choice was between this and starting a series of events that could mean that Brexit doesn't happen at all, I would back this. Number 10 will be hoping that more and more people start to think like that. But I think when you consider the strength, the extent of the hostility to it, which I think goes beyond the kind of hardcore of a kind of ERG group of Brexiteer MPs, then I think Number 10, the numbers even in those circumstances would still be extremely tight in Parliament. And that's even before we consider what other things that the EU will ask for it to become acceptable to them.
I mean, Labour is getting ready for a snap election at any point. Yesterday, the shadow cabinet met to strategise. Katie, what was said?
So apparently, according to people there, it wasn't the most exciting of meetings, despite the seemingly exciting topic of preparing for power. I think this is something actually that's been going over a course of a year, which is the leader's office trying to make sure that the party is election ready. So I think for some time now, departments for the shadow ministers have been asked, you know, what do you want to keep from that manifesto? What do you want to do with it? And it's basically working out what their election footing is. Today's quite interesting because Jeremy Corbyn is giving a speech on Brexit, where he's going to talk about British interests and how Brexit can be used to protect those. And it's probably a tone that I wouldn't say is natural to most Labour members. It's a tone that will appear to Brexit voters who are perhaps protectionist, rather than those cosmopolitan voters who like the idea of everyone being as one, because this does seem to pit Britain as, you know, being able to get one up on these countries that some like to see as, you know, their very close friends. But I think going back to what we were just saying now about whether Tory MPs will get behind this deal, there's also a question of whether Labour MPs will get behind Theresa May's deal in the end. And I do think on both sides we're getting a lot of huff and puff at the moment about how awful it is. But ultimately that's because they're hoping they can get her to change course, and whether it's to soften it or harden it. So it'll come to that, really. I think there's still probably a sizable number of Labour MPs who could get behind Theresa May if they decide that, you know, that is the best chance of not having a no-deal Brexit. So I do suspect this whole thing will come down to whether or not, when you vote for that final deal, people can agree on what follows. Because if it is no Brexit, and if it is a hard Brexit, I think you'll see one side peel away from going ahead and not voting for the deal.
Thanks, Katie and James. That's all for today, but if you've enjoyed that podcast, do subscribe, rate and review us. And we also have a special summer offer. Get 1 month's free access to The Spectator online when you go to spectator.co.uk/summer. Thanks for listening.